This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 113 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max.
Hi, David. This week's hashtag, actually next week's hashtag, what have we got?
New Air Days, hashtag N-U-A-I-R-D-A-Y-S. And the reason why we're promoting that is because next week, Max and I will be recording at least some of it in person, together, and not staring at each other's monitors.
That's right.
We're really fortunate. We're looking forward to having been invited to the New Air Alliance and the Empire State Chapter of AUVSI to the second annual UAS Industry Days, and the topic is collaboration for innovation. And of course, we know the New Air was one of our very first guests. They are one of the FAA test sites, and they take place in upstate New York. So Max will be driving from Connecticut, and I will be driving from Pennsylvania, and we will have our support staff with us, Professor Vanderhoof and Drone Mama.
That's right. So, our roadies.
Our roadies, yes. I guess we can't really call them groupies, can we?
No.
No, I think they're more roadies. Mr. English's groupies. That's right. So look forward to us tweeting. If you're going to be at the show, try to get a hold of us. Either by Facebook or by Twitter or email us. We definitely like to meet some of our listeners if you're going to be at the show. So
that's right. And that'll be in Verona, New York. And the dates are September 22nd and 23rd.
So we're really looking forward to that. It's going to be an interesting opportunity. I have to get over some excitement about interviewing people at Andrews Air Force Base on Saturday, but it's going to be a good next week, I think, for me, because it's getting back in the swing of things for doing this offsite stuff that I used to love to do so much for the other shows. So, and I'm healthy enough to do it, and I'm looking forward to seeing my co-host. So, but we need to get on with this show because we got a lot to talk about, like flight planning for drones, close calls that might not have been so close, Canadian agriculture wants UAVs, another bill that's crossed Jerry's desk for him to sign or decline, the Reaper goes ER, and of course we have videos and listener mail. So with that, I think we should get started with the first story. What do you think, Max?
Let's get started.
Well, our first story is from our former guest and active listener, Tim Trott, and this is from AOPA.org. Lockheed Martin is enhancing their online flight planning tool to include unmanned flight plans, which is really good because we need some sort of tool that people can file flight plans because it's a requirement for the 333 exemptions. And Lockheed stepping in to try to integrate their flight planning tool with UAVs.
Which makes a lot of sense to me. That tool, those flight briefings, that capability services manned aircraft really well. And you can get in there and learn weather information, NOTAMs, METARs, things like that. And it only makes sense to me that you would include unmanned flights that are accompanied by a filed flight plan. So this wouldn't be super low altitude, hobbyist, recreational kind of flying, right, David? This would be more kind of commercial applications where a flight plan is filed.
Absolutely. And it's geared towards people who are going to be doing this commercially. you know, people who have 333 exemptions, you know, they need to file flight plans. And this is a really good step. I mean, let's hear it for Lockheed for looking beyond just the current needs and try and integrate UAVs into piloted airspace. But of course, there's always the pilots who fly manned aircraft who get a little cranky. And some of the comments on this article were disappointing, I guess, shall we say. What do you think, Max?
That's a good word. I was going to say distressing, but disappointing. Yeah, same thing. Now, I'm an AOPA member myself. And so I have some affinity to that group. It's a great organization. But some of the comments under the article were, kind of troubling. Some examples. So one was, so now we pilots are going to have to contend with objects in the air and deviate just to keep a new fad profitable. That one comment and others that are kind of like it don't represent the entire AOPA membership, I'm sure. But it does point out that, you know, there is another point of view as to unmanned vehicles in the air, in the airspace, the risks they represent to manned aircraft. There is another view, and, you know, we need to keep that in mind, and we need to win those people over. We also need to demonstrate to those people that both manned and unmanned can coexist in the same airspace safely. So it's a big task ahead of us, I think.
It's education. I tease about dronophobes, but there's a lot of people who have really deep-seated fears about flying in the same airspace with UAVs. And I don't fault these people. They have their opinions. It may not necessarily be correct or incorrect, but they have strong feelings about it. And we can't deny that. So we just need to educate them so that those feelings will go away. And education is the best way to do it. But that leads us to our next topic, which is, this was from USA Today. Drone hobbyists find flaws in close call reports to FAA from other aircraft. So we've got quite a few reports, and the Academy of Model Aeronautics also responded to the FAA drone sighting report and looked at the 764 close calls, quote unquote, that the FAA reported in August. And we'll have links to that report again in the show notes. According to the AMA, they said only 27 incidents were actually called near misses by the pilots. So it looks like there's headlines, and if you drill down deeper, the headlines aren't matching up with what the data says.
Yeah, they found that in only 10 cases was evasive action taken on the part of the pilot. I mean, that's a serious kind of a situation, but it's, you know, far less than the 764 total incidents. They also found things like some of the reported altitudes of the encounters were really too high for any kind of a small UAV. There were reports at altitudes ranging from, for example, 19,000 all the way up to 51,000 feet. So it's kind of not likely that that someone's flying a quadcopter up there at 50,000 feet. But there were also some other things in the data. There were sightings of public agency activity, commercial operators that may or may not have been flying with authorization. There was an example of one of those that was a police drone over a crime scene. And there were also flights that were being conducted by the military. So, yeah, the headline, all of us looked at that 764 incidents and thought, gee, that's pretty significant. It is pretty significant. But when you look at the data, you know, you start to wonder, you know, how much of this really represents issues, something probably smaller than that 764.
Yeah, unfortunately, the headline gets people going, and we get back to what we were discussing just previously about people have fears. You know, when they see headlines that say 764 near misses, and we had that, what for a bit there was an official UAV strike until it was proven that it was a bird strike. So we've got to educate the general public and got to educate the FAA about putting out stuff without, you know, I guess they looked at it as they're just going to put the data out and let people make the determination. But I think basically they got to work better on their media communications.
And I didn't get the sort of the feeling or the vibe, let's say, that the AMA is coming out and saying, see, this stuff really isn't a problem. I mean, I don't really think that they're trying to make that point. I think instead they're making this point that, you know, that you just mentioned, David, is that let's look carefully at the data and understand what we're looking at. And that's an important thing to do. So I think it's great that the AMA has done this. There's some more detail that you can read in the links that we'll put in the show notes, things like, you know, some of these sightings were balloons, some of them were birds, some of them were model rockets, they're even mini blimps are in there as well. In some cases, those are mistaken for or reported as drone sightings, even when they may not be. There's even a UFO report in there, David. So anyway, thanks to the AMA for taking a kind of a detailed look at that.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think the AMA is not saying, nah, 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 you're wrong. I think they're saying we need to keep looking at this. And I think the AMA and most of the drone organizations want to work with pilots. We got to get the pilots to want to work the other way around. So I think we're good for that. And let's talk about agriculture and agriculture in Manitoba, Western Canada. The Keystone Agricultural Producers of Manitoba, or CAP, are worried that Transport Canada is going to overregulate UAVs and they're not going to be able to use them for precision agriculture. This came from the Manitoba Cooperator.ca. So interesting that we've got now organizations in the agriculture industry that are working together to want to do precision alcohol. There's an outtake for the end of the show. Want to do precision agriculture and are worried that overregulation is going to prevent that.
Yeah, the president of CAP, Dan Mazier, says that CAP would like dialogue before they being Transport Canada, make regulations. If they are going to put a certain regulation in, at least consult farm groups or farmers and ask how they can work with it, which I think is a valid point. Transport Canada says that we should be expecting regulatory requirements for UAVs from them sometime in 2016. They say that they'll create different classifications, maybe even a micro drone category, which I think is a great idea. They're going to establish marking and registration requirements for unmanned aircraft. They're going to address licensing and training for operators and create flight rules. So we're looking forward to that in 2016 from Transport Canada.
And the agriculture people are concerned about losing the SFOC, or Special Flight Operating Certificate. And it's for high-risk operations for larger UAVs. So hopefully Transport Canada has been very progressive as far as putting forth UAV regulations. Let's hope they not take a step back and they continue. But it is interesting to see that the one industry I didn't ever think we'd get really aggressive about it, about use of UAVs, is agriculture. And that seems to be, I think we're going to see more and more of the push for agriculture wanting to use UAVs, and they might be the driver for commercial certificates.
Now, David, you know, it seems like California legislators have been very active these days when it comes to drone legislation.
Yeah, there's another one sitting on Governor Jerry Brown's desk, although this one I sort of got to agree with. The last one, of course, was the one that said that you could fly between 350 and 400 feet, which Governor Brown vetoed a week ago or 2 weeks ago. This is Senate Bill 168, and this legislation seeks to address problems seen repeatedly when drones interfere with emergency responders like firefighters. Now, for our global listeners, California is you could almost say, on fire. It's serious wildfires, and they're not going out. And we've had a lot of incidences where drones have interfered with the process of aerial firefighting, where we use bombers and transports to put out fires. And this is where it's driving this legislation. And it would basically grant immunity for prosecution if a first responder takes out the UAV because it's interfering with their responsibilities.
And we saw an example of that not too long ago, where there were firefighters, in this case, putting out a fire at a residence. A home was on fire and burning. And a drone, came up and was videotaping. I say videotaping. That dates me, I guess. Was taking video of the activity there, and the firefighters actually shot at the quadcopter with their fire hose. So this, which of course, then the operator of the drone thought that the fire department ought to reimburse him for the damage. In this legislation, the emergency responders, the firefighters, would be immune from responsibility for any kind of damage like that. But it would also increase the fines for drone operators who interfere with emergency responders. So, yeah, I think I agree with you, David. I mean, it seems like this is a good idea. I would like to see something just in general that says if you interfere with an emergency responder or interfere with a firefighter, regardless of what technology or not that you use to create that interference, then there ought to be, a prohibition against that. So I'm not so thrilled about drone-specific, technology-specific legislation, but I can certainly understand it.
Yeah, I'm gonna still keep my opinion that, you know what, I'm okay. We have a lot of people who don't listen to the show, who listen to our other show, Airplane Geeks, who think that we are very pro drones, and we are, but we are also very pro kick their ass when they do something wrong. And I'm all for locking people up if they're stupid enough to fly a drone and it's interfering with a fire bomber. You lock them up, and there's just no need for that. And we'll have a conversation a little bit later in listener feedback where it looks like in the UK somebody got locked up, which is, I was cheering loudly for that. So, but wait, there's more coming, isn't there?
Yeah, the article mentions two other pieces of legislation that are kind of in the pipeline. This is at the federal level, but these were introduced by California legislators. One is H.R. 3025, the Wildfire Airspace Protection Act of 2015. And this would make it a criminal offense to launch a drone that interferes with firefighting wildfires on federal land. And that comes from Congressman Paul Cook. And then we also have one from U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein, don't we, David?
We do. And this is the this is the Senate Bill 1608, the Consumer Drone Safety Act, which requires features on consumer drones and strengthens regulations that regulate drone operations, like geofencing. And they're reaching out back to and putting the onus on the manufacturers to prevent these things from happening. Now, I don't know how you geofence a wildfire. If we knew how to do that, we wouldn't have to do firebombing. We could put it out easily. So, but it is interesting how the reaction to only a couple of incidents in California around wildfires has caused so much legislation. I mean, it's very reactionary, and I feel terrible for the people in California who are suffering through the wildfires, but sometimes you need to take a little step back. We'll see what happens with the federal legislation, because that will overwrite the local legislation.
All right, David, let's talk now about big and long.
Wow, that sounded a bit X-rated.
Sorry.
Don't fear the Reaper. The drone, the MQ-9, that was what started it all, was I got sick and tired of looking at predators and reapers firing Hellfires, but the Air Force has gone and made the Reaper better by sending it to the ER, ER standing for extended range. So now we've got the armed Reaper that's capable of up to 33 hours on patrol. That's pretty phenomenal upgrade in the technology.
Yeah, and it's been pretty simple what they've done, I guess. It's a field retrofittable package, I guess, and they make some modifications. For one thing, they install two wing-mounted fuel tanks to the Reaper, which gives it more range. Of course, that increases the weight of the aircraft. So there's some other modifications, aren't there, David, that they need to accommodate that higher weight?
Yeah, it got an alcohol water injection system, which will increase the power, a four-bladed propeller, and a stronger landing gear system to increase the weight. So these are still fairly simple modifications to make an aircraft substantially better. And General Atomics, who created it, which is a product of Boeing, has already fielded it operationally. And the field retrofittable package means that they can send out these and they don't need to come back home to the United States. They can be used outside of the United States and to increase the benefit. So good for the Air Force and the General Atomics for getting more bang for their buck, I guess we would say.
Yeah.
So our next story is actually a video. Unfortunately, Max and I didn't get to go this year, but it's the InterDrone conference that occurred last week in Las Vegas. And there was a lot of interesting things happening. You've had a chance to look through the whole video. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it, Max?
This is I think this is about a 48-minute video that shows product announcements from InterDrone. It's interviews on the floor. And this is part of Leo Laporte's Twit Network. Some people are familiar with that, one of their live special broadcasts. The program is hosted by Father Robert Balasair, who is one of the hosts of the Know How video podcast. It's a maker podcast. If you haven't ever watched that, I'd recommend it because this guy knows quadcopters. He builds them all the time. He has a number of episodes of the program where he talks about builds, talks about the considerations, how you select motors, propellers. I mean, not the whole thing. So anyway, this Twit Live special, again, is just focused on that InterDrone conference. And Father Balasair conducts some interviews from the floor. So it's a good way just to kind of get a feel for some of the things that went on at InterDrone. Just a small slice. The slice that it shows, David, I think when you consider the industry as a whole, is that a lot of times we talk about people who would be using drones commercially as tools to accomplish something. What we kind of see here is the other side of the supply chain, if you will, people who supply sensors, components, actual drones that can be used by others. So it's sort of a whole different side of the industry, and it looks pretty substantial. I think one of the exciting things was the infrared camera technology that's been increasing and dropping in price, beginning to become much more affordable to attach those kinds of cameras to, to simple quadcopters. So very interesting, highly recommend it. Put a link in the show notes.
And for our listeners who don't know, TWIT stands for what?
This Week in Tech, TWIT.
Leo Laporte is a friend of our co-host from the Australia desk, Mr. Vischer, who's made Mr. Flight very jealous because he's had a couple of times at the TWIT studios. So I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but I look forward to it. And let's talk about something I discovered just yesterday, and it's a shout out, and it's something called Think Before You Launch.
Yeah, this is big. I like this a lot, David. I'm glad you found that. I don't think it's been out that long, but why don't you describe what this is? Think Before You Launch.
Think Before You Launch is I don't want to say an outgrowth of Know Before You Fly, but it's geared for beyond the hobbyist. It's geared towards someone who's got a 333 exemption. What do they need? What do you need to think before you launch that aircraft? Are you near an airport? Do you need to know NOTAMs? We talked about Lockheed coming out with the flight planner. This has got, and there's a great infographic that we'll put in the show notes, of just reminders, little reminders of this is what you need to do before you fly, you know, and those checklists. You know, Max and I have a checklist before we start off every podcast. This is kind of one of those things, and it's designed to educate and get people aware so that we're not going to have accidents and people aren't flying over studios or, over stadiums or airports, etc. So I'm going to reach out to thinkbeforeyoulaunch.org. Hopefully, maybe we can get them on. But in the meantime, what I think is going to be a really good program.
Yeah, thinkbeforeyoulaunch.org. It's an awareness campaign, and it's an alliance, really, of both UAS and aviation stakeholders. And they really want to improve aviation safety. They want to educate users. And it looks like a great program. I actually did write to them this morning, David, because as I was looking at their partners there, the alliance members, the aviation stakeholders, it's a great list, but it needs to be a much bigger list. And I don't know if this is what I asked them, although I haven't heard back yet, if they're looking for other companies, other organizations to become part of this Think Before You Launch effort. I think that it could benefit by having a broader participation by a number of different companies and organizations. So hopefully we'll see some of that too, but this is a great find, David. We'll put links to this for sure in the show notes.
Well, on to our video, a second video of the week, and this one comes from Professor Vanderhoof. And if you don't know on Twitter, Professor Vanderhoof is my wife, Michelle. She was doing a little dreaming the other day and got a Tourism Ireland video of Blarney Castle in County Cork. It's a really well shot video of the castle and the grounds, etc. And it's got one of those nice calming sentiments, you know, and I really enjoyed it. It was just a slight reminder that I promised my wife before I die that I will take her to Ireland, which I will do. But it's just gorgeous. So
it is.
Take a few minutes and look at that. It's not that long. So with that, thank you, Professor Vanderhoof. With that, we'll move on to feedback.
Yes, we heard from Mark. He sent in a little interesting item from the BBC. This is man fined after flying drones over Premier League stadiums. And apparently, this individual had been flying over sporting events and London landmarks for some period of time, and even admits that he had been doing this. And so the court, the authorities there, they kind of came down hard on him.
Yeah, fined him £1,800 sterling, which is pretty hard. What I was sort of surprised about the BBC article was that it talks about the sporting stadiums as being the high threat things. However, he did fly over at least one royal castle that the Queen occupies and the royal family occupies, and that was not as big deal as flying over the soccer stadiums, which...
So what's more important, football or the Queen?
Well, yeah, I was just wondering about priorities, but definitely, Mark, thanks for following up on this. And again, if you're going to do something, unfortunately, we need to prosecute people and make examples of them. We don't need drones crashing into stadiums filled with people. So the next one is... This one's a bit of a request from me, and because I like helping people. And we got an email from Josh, who says he's a current student at the University of Pennsylvania. With a team of students, I'm conducting a study of small UAV operations. He's a former Air Force fighter pilot and have deep familiarity with aerial operations. However, I'm new to the small UAS operations. And he's looking to interview people with commercial UAV experience. They're primarily trying to determine the shortfalls and challenges associated with current UAV systems and procedures. And they're looking to talk about hardware, software, and data processing, not so much the legal aspects of it. So as a challenge to all of you out there, if you'd like to help Josh, send us an email at feedback@theUAVDigest.com. And we'll get the information over to him, and he can reach out and contact you. They sound like they really know what they're talking about, and I hope that we can help them. And it's a good resource, and I don't know, I'm groveling, I understand, but college students, you know, especially college students who, before they became college students, were active duty military, I'm all for, let's give them some help. So, with that, give us a shout out again. It's feedback@theUAVDigest.com, and we're looking for companies that want to talk about their commercial experiences. So with that, I think that wraps everything up other than, you know, Max, next week we'll have a different episode because we'll have recorded it, at least the intro and the conclusion face-to-face, huh?
That's right, and we'll hopefully get some interviews from the floor, try to get as many interesting people as we can to go on the record, stand in front of the mic and tell us what they're thinking, what their concerns are, what their solutions are. And we're looking to create as much of that content as we can. Maybe it'll extend over several episodes. Maybe we'll release some extra in-between episodes. We'll see how it goes.
So wish us luck, and remember the hashtag is #NewAirDays, NuAirDays, and of course follow us on Twitter, @TheUAVDigest, so you can find that hashtag, and our Facebook page, facebook.com/UAVDigest. Of course, we want feedback, so send it to feedback@TheUAVDigest.com. Also, definitely stop by our homepage, which is TheUAVDigest.com. We have lots and lots of conventions that are media advertising. So there might be a convention near you, and we might beg, you know, if you're going to go to one of these conventions, send us back a little audio so we can we know what happened there. Sort of like our experience with Twit and InterDrone. And of course, if you want to help the show, you can do it through multiple ways. One is leave a review on Stitcher or iTunes saying how much you love us. That way other people can find us. Purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store. Or, of course, you can become a patron, and we appreciate our patrons because they're giving us the ability to go to this new convention. And that's patreon.com/theUAVDigest. And those links are available on the show notes. So until next week in New York, this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.